Lines are open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's IR-TPC call on Tuesday, the 21st of February. We have Kevin Erdmann, Mike O'Connor, James Bladel, Michele Nalon, Alain Béranger, Bob Martin, Matt Serlin, Simonette the Tiger. From staff, we have Marika Konings and myself, Gisela Gruber and Glenda Saint-Géry. We have apologies today noted from Barbara Knight. Avery Doria should be joining us shortly. And if I could also please remind you all to state your names when speaking for transcript purposes. Chris Chapler has also just joined the call now. Thank you very much. Over to you, James.
Thank you, and good day, everyone. Welcome to the IRTPC call for February 21st, 2012. As per usual, we have a few housekeeping items before we get started. The first off is to allow anyone who has any changes or updates to their statements of interest, please speak now.
Ms. McKaylee,
yes,
I have updated my. I made a minor couple of tweaks to my statement of interest. Amongst other things, for some stupid reason, I was down as being a member of the business constituency, which I found a bit odd.
Oh, that's a weird thing.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm also
going to
make a couple of minor edits, nothing groundbreaking.
Okay, thank you, Michele. I think you warned us that change was coming, and so I appreciate that you've made that update, and anyone who is interested can check that out on the wiki, correct?
Yes, if you're bored and have nothing better to do.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, thanks, McKelly. And then the second item of housekeeping is to ask if there are any comments or changes to our proposed agenda that's in the that was sent around the mailing list and is currently displayed in your Adobe Connect screen. Okay, let's proceed with this agenda. So, a couple of updates, I think. That's item 3, 4, and 5. We'll try to go through these fairly quickly so that we can get into item number 6. It says continue deliberations, but I really think that in some respects we have to begin the deliberations. I think that we've kind of danced around the beginning part, but we never really seem to have time to it. So if we can get through item 3, 4, and 5, as quickly as possible, then maybe we can spend the bulk of our call on that. As far as item 3, we have established a data sub-team, a data gathering sub-team, and a sub-team to define an ideal process for change of control. These two sub-teams are currently active. However, I think that the data gathering sub-team could probably use some help in particular. So, is there anyone that's interested in joining and or leading the data gathering sub-team? Hi, Marika. Go ahead.
Yeah, it is, Marika. Maybe we can just remind people who actually have already signed up for that group, and that's yourself, James, Jonathan Tenenbaum, Roy Dykes, and Simonetta. I didn't receive any other responses in relation to the action items that I sent out. So those were, I think, the people that volunteered on last week's call.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. I see Bob has his hand up. Well, Bob, would you like to join the team?
Yeah, James, I'd be happy to join and happy to lead if that's appropriate.
That's not only appropriate, but very welcome, Bob.
Sure. No, happy to jump in.
Okay. So, Marika, can we indicate that Bob is looking to take the lead on that effort?
Yes, I'll do so, and maybe then I can liaise with Bob offline how we would like to proceed if you want to set up a separate call or a mailing list.
Okay, thank you, and thank you, Bob. The next item is that we have a process for change of control. This team has formed, and we are planning a brainstorming session. Just to get that started, we have thrown some principles out to the mailing list. Not the general mailing list, but just the list among the sub-team members. So we're in the very, very early embryonic stages of this, probably because 50% of our team was otherwise unavailable last week. We wanted to set up a separate call to discuss. I think we're only waiting on a confirmation of time from Simonetta. So, Simonetta, I would ask if you could take a look at your, when you get caught up on your email, we've put a couple of options in there for a sub-team conference call. If you could take a look and tell us which one is your preference, that would be fantastic. Oh, I see Simonetta's still a little jet-lagged, I think. So, as soon as you can let us know, that would be great. Thank you. The final the preliminary item was to review the background briefing materials for our meeting in Costa Rica with the CCNSO. And, oh, I'm sorry, Marika, I did not notice your hand was up. Go ahead, please.
No, it isn't, Marika. I just put my hand up in relation to this item. I just wanted to provide a little bit of background to this note because I had a conversation with my colleague, Bart Boswinkel, who supports the CCNSO, and he indicated that this is actually the first time that the CCNSO meets with a GNSO working group. And, you know, the way the CCNSO works is very different from how the GNSO operates, you know, same way that, you know, the GNSO develops consensus policies, different process or different topics that are usually, you know, part of CCNSO policy development. So, for that matter, we thought it would be helpful if this group could prepare a kind of background briefing to really try to explain to the CCNSO, you know, what this working group is looking at and what the objective of the meeting is, to really try to get as, you know, much as possible out of that session, you know, by preparing everyone accordingly. So what I try to do is just try to, you know, put the relevant information together and, you know, hopefully, you know, that could be as a starting point, and then, you know, happy to take any comments or suggestions that the working members, working group members think might be helpful to add or amplify or change to really make sure that, you know, we have all the relevant information there. And at the same time, I'll also ask my colleague, Bart, to have a look at that to really make sure that from a CCNSO perspective, this all makes sense, because I think all of us are so immersed in the GNSO world that a lot of things, you know, are seem obvious or clear, but it might not be the same from the CCNSO perspective. And following that, hopefully then Avery and James can share this with Mathieu Well, who is the topic leader from the CCNSO side for that session, and see if there's anything else that needs to be done in advance of the meeting.
Okay, thank you, Marika. And I guess I wasn't aware that this was the first time we were having this discussion between the GNSO and the CCNSO. It seems like there would have been a number of topics in the past that could have benefited from that. And we should be mindful that we are, in some ways, setting a precedent, and if that's a problem with either the GNSO or the CCNSO, then perhaps we should just make sure to emphasize that this is an information-gathering meeting and that we're simply seeking their advice and their and some of the background on their experiences. If you haven't... was this document sent to everyone, Marika, or has it just been circulated between you and Avery and I?
This was included with the agenda, and it's also posted on the wiki.
Okay, so while maybe there wasn't a lot of time to review it, at least it is available to be reviewed. I can report to the team that I did review this document, and I made one minor change, but otherwise I thought it was an excellent summary of what we were seeking for Charter Question A and what sort of things we were looking for from the CCNSO and what sort of, you know, items we wanted to glean from their experience with the change of control function. Most of this is background, I think, that our group is very familiar with. If you skip down to the top of page 3, I think you get to the heart of the purpose of meeting with the CCNSO, which is, are these 5 specific questions here. So perhaps, you know, if you have a few minutes, you could take a look at those in the next couple of days, and please let Marika know, let's say by, did we have a deadline for this, Marika? But if we could set a deadline in the near future to make any edits or changes to this or incorporate any feedback from this group. But I think the questions that you've listed here are fairly comprehensive and should prompt a good discussion and exchange of ideas with the CCNSO. any thoughts or comments on that, or does anyone see a question right now that they'd like to change? Okay. Well, take a look at that, and then if you can get back to Marika as soon as possible, I think our goal is to get this over to the CCNSO for their review as soon as possible. Okay, thank you. And now moving to question or item, agenda item number 6. And that is the deliberations on charter question A. And if you recall, I'm sorry, go ahead, Marika.
It isn't, Marika. I think you skipped over item 5.
Okay, yeah, I didn't, sorry, correct. We skipped item 5 because we were just kind of covering that in the item 3 as far as the review team. But if you want, and I would ask McKelly and Mikey, who seem to feel like the list of requirements or concepts that we were passing around was probably a little too early to share with the rest of the group. But I would defer to them as if they feel that this is something that they would like to share now or something they would like to provide in a larger update during our next call. Mikey, go ahead.
Thanks, James. It's Mikey. I just assume wait. I haven't even really read them because I assumed that it was being fed into our brainstorming session, and so I think it's a little premature. I don't have strong feelings either way, but given my druthers, I'd wait.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. And I think Simonetta probably hasn't had a chance to review them either. So I think, Marika, we would like to get one more opportunity to flesh those out a little bit before presenting those to the group. Okay. Okay, so then if we could pull up the mind map for item number 6, and this is charter question A. This is, I think we agree, this is going to be the probably the bulk of our working group's effort. So I think that by taking a methodical approach on charter question A and ensuring that we don't, as working groups tend to kind of circle issues without addressing them head on, then perhaps that if we can avoid that, we can maybe cut some of the time off of the end-to-end effort for this working group. But here's the outline that we set up for charter question A, and I think we can start here at the beginning. Mikey, you're driving, right?
Aye, sir.
Okay, awesome. Fantastic. Thank you. So if we can take a look, we have, there's one highlighted here that we are talking about this ideal process, and that's something that we identified, I think, earlier on that we wanted to develop what an ideal process would look like, and then put that out there for folks to throw rocks at, poke it with sticks. But if we could start at the beginning and understand why we are even looking at this question and what problems we're trying to solve, I think that, if I recall, we kind of addressed early in working group B, as well as in this working group, that there is this absence of guidance. I think that this was abundantly clear in the presentation of the in the youth case sub-team that was presented by Bob and some of the other folks, is that registries and registrars have invented and innovated around this absence with some interesting and some might say confusing processes. But the question on the table for this working group is, should we fill this absence with a uniform policy that is handled consistently across all registrars? And I think that we, if memory serves, we kind of put that question out to the group during a previous call that whether or not we felt this was even appropriate for ICANN to make policy in this area. And I think that the overwhelming consensus of this working group is that this is within the scope of ICANN's remit. So we've identified that there is a problem, that it's within ICANN's remit to solve the problem, and I guess then it just falls to this working group to see if any of the proposed solutions that we can come up with address the problem while still maintaining a light touch, or if a medicine is worse than the disease. And I think that's probably where we are in our discussions. Does anyone want to comment on just this kind of meta discussion of whether or not this problem exists, what its impact is, and whether or not they feel that this working group and ICANN in general have a legitimate role here? Simonetta, go ahead.
I think it would be nice to capture that one of the main issues with this is not necessarily with the registrars or the registries, but with the people who actually try to move a domain name from A to B and maybe have no experience with it. And for them, this process is really breaking down and broken.
Okay, I think that's an excellent observation that we should capture, is that the registrants are the ones who are most adversely affected. And I think because it's most impactful for inexperienced registrants, it creates an asymmetrical marketplace advantage for those who are more experienced.
And not just the inexperienced ones. I mean, I think it became clear also in our subteams that even people who have some experience with this stuff struggle.
Well, that's a good point, and I see Mikey typing furiously, so it looks like he's capturing that. Okay. Thank you, Mikey. Thank you, Simonetta. Bob is agreeing with that. And I think that given Bob and Simonetta's closeness to the secondary markets, I think that's important that they're contributing those experiences. So, okay, looks like we're higher RPM. I don't know what that means. Okay, so can we then look at the next item then, Mikey, on the mind map here, where we talk about background? I don't know that we need to dive into here this section as deeply as we have. We've covered this, I think, fairly extensively, most notably in the slideshow that the subteam prepared for this group. As we understand how in the background and in the next item about how this is currently achieved. I think we've fairly comprehensively showcased the situation as it exists today, which is not good. Does anyone have anything they want to add to the background or to the current implementation? Because I think if you can kind of figure that with the sentences that Mikey is constructing here in this flowchart, we are sort of building an outline for our report and some of our findings as we're setting up the context for this report. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, James. This is Bob. I guess it's more of a question. Is it that there is no ICANN policy to address change in control, or that that it's ambiguous? I wasn't sure which was the case, but just wanted to see if I could get clarification on that.
Yeah, that's a good question, Bob. I tend to think, and I'll just respond and then we'll throw it over to staff. I tend to think that there is no specific mention of ICANN policy, that the transfer was supposed to be for to establish a competitive registrar marketplace. But yet, I think that one thing that tells me I'm not completely correct in that is that when one of the options for implementing a UDRP decision is to transfer, the domain name. So that almost implies that ICANN believes that the transfer policy is at least an acknowledgement of it, that it's a de facto change of control. So I'm not really quite sure how to answer that. I would say no, that there is no policy, but yet there we have this one example where ICANN somewhat references it. Maybe McKelly can help me out with that. Go ahead, McKelly.
I don't know if I can help you, but I mean, how do I word this? If there is a policy covering change of control, could somebody please tell me where the hell it is? Because I can't see it. I don't know where it is. It's not there. I mean, as far as a simplistic view is that ICANN has policy for the transfer of a domain between accreditations. It has policies with respect to a whole range of various things, but it doesn't have policies governing a change of registrant or a change of control or a change of administration or anything like that. The only kind of policies you can get at are things like the registrar is obliged to allow the registrant to make changes to who is and those kind of things. And I don't know, I think there's other bits and pieces about, you know, enacting various decisions such as UDRPs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which I suppose would have some kind of change of control. But there is no actual policy, whereas for CCTLDs, there are two concepts, there's a clear demarcation between them. There are policies that cover the change of registrar without any change to anything else. So if you want to move a domain, for example, from registrar A to registrar B to registrar C or whatever, there's a policy and a process for doing that. If you want to change the registrant without changing the registrar, there's a policy to do that. And if you want to do both at the same time, then there's a policy for that as well. I mean, there's something there in a lot of the CCTLDs. So I'd say, to answer Bob's question in a most long-winded manner possible, because Bob knows what I'm like, and once I start, I can't stop. No, there is no policy. Or if there is, it's well hidden. Thanks.
Thanks, McKelly. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Bob. So I guess there's an acknowledgement that this event actually occurs, but little or no guidance as to how it should occur. So there's a sort of a vacuum of sort of structure around this type of event. So that, I think to me that would sort of support that we do need to, augment what's there and provide that structure. So that would be my sort of weigh in on that.
I think that's a very astute assessment, Bob. And I think that's something we came up with in IRTP B as well, when we asked staff to go back and take a look at all the policy documents and help us find, you know, where this is coming from. And I think that, you know, they came back with pretty much what you just said. McKelly, go ahead.
Well, I mean, the thing is this, just kind of following on, I mean, there's probably quite a few other areas where ICANN doesn't have policies or processes or whatever. And some things, it probably never will have policies or processes because there's no need. There's no problem to be fixed. In the case of this particular area, I would say that most registrars have had some kind of issue involving a change or control which has led to a headache. Now, it may not be a massive headache, but the headache has far outweighed any value of the transaction. So, for example, if you're selling a .com domain name, just for argument's sake, with a retail where the margin is, let's say, 1 euro or 2 euro, or let's just say less than 10 euro a year, I mean, how many headaches, to use that term, can you actually afford to sustain per year due to a lack of clear policy or guidance? That's what I would say. I mean, there's other areas where, you know, I don't think ICANN has a position, and it shouldn't have a position, because there's no need. But there's other areas, if you see what's happened with some of the new TLDs, where the ICANN community has said, well, hold on a second, this needs to be addressed. It's not easy for them to retroactively address us with existing TLDs, but there's a strong feeling that they need to be addressed with new TLDs. So if you look at some of the stuff that's in the DAG, or whatever the hell it's called these days, you can see that. But again, I don't think there's anything about this particular thing. Thanks.
Thanks, McKelly. I just wanted to add one thing that, I think Bob's correct. There's a pain in the marketplace. There's another sort of a hole or a loophole that a change of control function could address, and that is that we allow registrants to update, we're required, in fact, to allow registrants to update all of their WHOIS information. But we've also established through a number of policies, including the UDRP and others, that the name and organization and contact data that is in the registrant field is legally responsible for the domain name. And I think that this has been upheld and is generally understood to be true, that whoever's listed there is the person or entity that's responsible. Furthermore, that registrars are required to have a contract, an agreement, with that entity that is listed in the registrant agreement. So where we get into a little bit of trouble is that a registrant could come in, if I were doing something a little fishy or nefarious, if I were stealing cat photos from McKelly against his copyright claims, I could say unilaterally and without her knowledge, assign that to, if I can pick on Marika a little bit, make Marika responsible for that name. And not only have I kind of confused the issue of who is responsible for this domain name, but the registrar may not have any knowledge or awareness of Marika and has certainly not entered into a registration agreement with Marika. So they're already... In some ways, the registrant has caused the registrar to be in breach of that section of the RAA because they have now have a person with whom they do not have a an acknowledged registration agreement. So I think that this, in addition to the issues in the aftermarket, I mean, this is which are numerous, I think, as we've identified. There's also this other loophole, which is that the unilateral blind pushing of a domain name to a new registrant without the registrar's awareness and without that registrant's awareness. And I think a change of control process should address that as well and have some sort of an acknowledgement from the new registrant that, yes, they accept responsibility for that and they accept the registrar's terms of service. And I see McKelly would like to weigh in on this subject, so go ahead, McKelly.
I think, James, I mean, you having served on the Whois RT, or whatever the hell it was called, thing, I mean, you probably have a certain amount of, you might be thinking subconsciously about some of these issues as well. I mean, at the moment, well, actually, I think I cited these up, I don't know if it was in this working group or was it with, over beer with somebody or what, where we were practically taken to court here in Ireland over a domain name that we had no knowledge about. It wasn't registered through us, wasn't on our accreditation or anything, yet somebody had decided to put our contact details into the Whois without our knowledge or permission. And this kind of thing happens quite regularly. It also goes to this entire, you know, a lot of things about Whois accuracy, where, you know, you can say that the Whois is accurate in that it's an accurate address. It's just nobody ever gave anybody permission to use that address or those contact details. So I think, you know, there's an entire segue there that's very, very interesting. And I don't know, just thought I'd mention that in passing, and sorry if I wasn't that coherent.
No, it's good, McKelly, and it's always good to have some first-hand experience with these abstractions that we talk about in these meetings. I think the key point I was trying to make, not to take the discussions off topic, was to say that we really have a number of issues here or implications of lack of policy. And that is that the receiving registrant, I think that from the aftermarket or secondary perspective, the receiving registrant is aware. They want the name. They pay for the name. They want someone to transfer it to them. But there's this other case where there's a lack of awareness, where a name is unilaterally pushed to someone who wasn't expecting it and didn't ask for it and didn't pay for it. So, any other thoughts on this topic in particular, or any other issues associated with the lack of ICANN policy here? Okay. I see Mikey is taking dubious notes. Mikey, if you ever get to an area where you want to weigh in on a topic, and please feel free to pause the notes. We'll definitely catch them up from the transcript. Don't want to feel like you're left out of the conversation, sir. Very nice. Okay, so what is the next item then in our approach? We go down here to, I think we've covered that pretty extensively. There is no existing policy. We are was not designed with the aftermarket. I think that the secondary market is something that has happily arisen, as innovative industries tend to do. But just like a number of things in this industry, such as who is, it is completely run past and outstripped its the original design. So so something that wasn't conceived of at the outset caused confusion and frustration between registrars and registrants. I think that that's more than demonstrated in the slideshow that we have. All the different combinations, I think, were also captured. The ad hoc market-based solutions. As long as we're not using ad hoc in a pejorative here, because I think a lot of organizations, and I'll pick on Sado and Name Media here, I think that they really created a lot of value in this space, and that shouldn't be ignored. But on the other hand, I think that we should all acknowledge that in a better policy environment, they wouldn't have had to work so hard to do all that. So I think that that's something to be aware of. But Kelly, there is a item in the chat. What is CVO? I don't see where that acronym is. Possible I missed it. Ignore me. Okay, I can do that. So, any other thoughts here on the background? So, we've identified the problem, we've identified the pain, and I like Bob's characterization of that, and that we've identified some of the significant amount of the background and what we would be attempting to solve. So, any other thoughts on this? Okay. Thanks for capturing all that, Mikey. If we can close that and move on to our next section. Investigating how this is currently achieved. I think that, and I want to just kind of draw a box around this and say that I think that we covered this fairly comprehensively with the sub-team. And all the different use cases and permutations of inter and intra registrar transfers with and without change of control. But does anyone feel that this maybe that we missed something, or that was not sufficiently explained? How much time should we establish to this? I want to give everyone a chance here if they feel like that wasn't enough. I see a clear cue here. I'm going to assume that means that we are very happy with the work that was done by that sub-team. I know I was, and that we accept that their findings are compelling, that this is how this is currently achieved. Mikey?
I got tired of typing. This is Mikey. I think the one thing we might want to do, I haven't taken a look at the slide deck when it was completed, but we might want to go back through that slide deck and summarize the process that documented. Because what we did, as I recall, I should say what the team did, because I wasn't on it, was show slide by slide how the process works. And so it's, in some cases, 20, 30, 40 slides long. It might be neat to take each slide and turn it into a flowchart that summarizes it. And I don't know that it ever happened when the final version came out. But it would be nice to have, you know, maybe a 3 or 4 page flowchart summary of the different processes that were documented so that people don't have to wade through 50 or 60 slides to get the sense of the variation. That would be my only thought about the final product of that team. Bob, Simonet, did you all ever get back to doing that? Or does that seem like a useful suggestion?
Yeah, this is Bob. Sorry, Marika, you were in the queue ahead of me. Did you want to jump in first, though?
Yeah, this is Marika. I was just going to suggest that if you look at the CCNSO briefing document, there I already tried to start at least for the CCNSO, like a kind of table that, you know, tries to compare the main characteristics. So indeed, it might be helpful to extend that table looking at the use cases. So, you know, the group gets a clear idea of different characteristics and is able then as well to compare those and see, you know, what works, what doesn't work, you know, what are the advantages of you know, one process over the other, or whether a hybrid, you know, should be explored. So I think it definitely would be useful to try to do that at some point. Maybe as well following the meeting with the CCNSO when we get hopefully some further input and feedback from other CC colleagues.
Yeah, and Mikey, if I could jump in. So, yes, in the final version, we did have a flowchart for each use case, so it is there. You know, we don't have a consolidated flowchart of all different ones because I think they were so different that it probably wouldn't really be a viable approach. But there is a summary of each kind of separate scenario. So.
Oh, that's perfect. Combining them would be this is Mikey. Combining would be horrendous. I was just looking for that. Video one. That's terrific. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob and Mikey and Marika. I think I do remember seeing something like that as well, or maybe it was an introductory slide that kind of for each scenario. But I think, you know, my personal preference, Mikey, would be to keep the flowchart quick and dirty and emphasize on like a text-based outline, because I think that's ultimately what's going to form the seed of the language that goes into the report based on that effort, whereas a flowchart might be attached as an appendix or an annex. So that's just my thought here. But maybe if if we can get some folks to revisit that and just take a look and make sure they're happy with that, that's probably a good effort. But I think that as far as the meat and potatoes of the issue of all the different examples or specimens of all the different scenarios that we could think of, I think that the sub-team did an excellent job of covering all of those bases. So now we're just kind of talking about what format we want their findings to take. Okay. So if we can move down to the next section here, it looks like we've got about 20 minutes left in our call. And this one, unfortunately, is going to be a little quick in that we say, identify if there are any applicable models in the CCTLD space that are best practice. I don't think we can answer this question or really say much about it. Michele, I think, has some expertise, as well as some of our folks who are involved in the secondary market, and I know Mr. Serlin's firm deals with these change of control issues as well. But while we might be able to introduce this subtopic today, I don't know that we can close it down until we've actually had our discussions with the CCNSO in Costa Rica and gathered their experience. But if there's anyone that would like to kick us off and get us started here, we'd certainly would welcome the discussion, but I think that we're going to have to, regardless of what we say here today, we're going to have to circle back and revisit this after our chat with the CCNSO. And I see that we're seeing at least one request for Mr. Nalan to weigh in with his experience on some of the country codes. So let's put you on the spot a little bit, Michele. I know that you're shy and don't like to talk, but if you could maybe
I'm a shy little flower that wilts when put under a little light, as you all know.
What's your favorite? Do you have one that you are particularly a CCTLD model that you particularly like, or do you have one?
I can tell you the ones that I like, and I can tell you the ones I don't like.
Excellent.
Okay. First off, bearing in mind this is me speaking in my personal capacity, not representing anybody other than myself and my own company. Just so we're clear, so I'm not representing any other position. Yeah, thanks, Mikey. That does sum it up. But I just put it in there. Simple is always best. And it doesn't really matter whether the process is handled via the registrars, via EPP, via some extension of EPP, through a web interface, or using smoke signals, as long as it works in a simple, consistent manner. So a change of control, for example, the way Nominet handles it, is, in my mind, I mean, it has a certain flaw in that it's a billable process that the registrant has to pay for, and they pay Nominet directly for, but is so incredibly simple and fast. I mean, you can literally update a single domain or thousands of domains, in other words, changing registrant, never mind registrar, just registrant, in a single transaction that takes seconds. It's so incredibly fast. It's amazing. The .eu system, it's not bad. The problem with .eu, which is going to be resolved shortly, is that they kind of cause confusion because they had multiple types of transfers and trades. So you have transfer between registrars with a change of registrant, transfer between registrants, in other words, a change of control without a transfer between registrars, and then they also have the concept of a quarantine for domains that are pending delete, so every single type of transfer also had the option of a transfer from quarantine. Mm-hmm. And trying to kind of manage that in terms of a web form and everything else became a bit of a nightmare.
Okay, just a moment, Michele. We're getting some background noise, so if we could ask everyone to make sure that you're on mute when you're not speaking. If we could make sure everyone has their line on mute. Go ahead, Michele.
Yeah, I mean, the .ie one is possibly the worst in a number of ways because they don't really have any EPP commands or anything like that for handling it. So it's all terribly manual, and the entire thing is open to being gamed. I mean, there's nothing. The way that they do it, and some of the other smaller CCs do it, is based on faxes and paper, but it's not a complete kind of there's a lot of loopholes. I mean, there's very little to stop you from fraudulently representing yourself as being the authorized agent of a company and sending something in on plausible looking headed paper and both changing the control of the domain and even transferring it between registrars either at the same time or later. It's overly manual, it's overly complicated, and it's incredibly subjective. So that doesn't work. Whereas with, say, the COUK system, you see, you've got quite a good balance there in that you have to have access to various different records in order to be able to do it. And as it's conducted by the registry, it's not a case of any kind of weakness with a tiny registrar or whatever that, could lead to other problems. Same with the URID thing. URID as well also have another option, which is for making a minor update to a registrant, which they call a patrolled update or something like that, where basically they will, you ask them for authorization to modify the registrant, and then they will give you like a window of 12 hours to make minor changes. This wouldn't be for a complete change, but this might be, for let's say for argument's sake, that you went from being an LLC to being an Inc. I know that legally that's quite a big change, but just for illustrative purposes. Maybe Chris and Matt might have something else to say on this matter. I've been blathering away for ages.
Thank you, Michele. I think that's really, really helpful. So I think what we're hearing you say is that Navinet is probably at the top of the scale, and IE is at the bottom, and then EU is probably somewhere in the middle, while effective, it's very confusing, all the different options. And I agree with you, they are changing that, probably to look a little bit more closely resemble what Navinet is doing. Mr. Chaplow, please go ahead.
Yes, I was just going to throw the .es, the Spanish one, into the pot. And, of course, that's a nightmare in paperwork, and it's a while since I've done it now because it's just a lot of trouble, and we'd far better keep away from them. But as far as I know, you're looking at paperwork backup with copies of documentation, you know, driving license and things like that, and it takes about a month. In fact, I remember the SEDO country manager talking about it at a conference, and talking about the aftermarket and saying that the aftermarket situation in Spain would be difficult to improve it whilst it took so long to transfer a domain from one party to another. So it might be an interesting one for us to follow up, and maybe I could try some experiments and get some up-to-date information if we're not doing that anyway through the other working party.
Thank you, Chris, and I agree. I think we've had some recent discussions internally about what's going on with ES and whether or not, you know, aftermarket transactions like this are still even possible with their new process. It's been very difficult, very painful. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, James. It's Matt. I was just going to sort of piggyback onto what Michele said. Twofold. Number one, I think I agree with the TLD that he highlighted as being both on the sort of ease of use and then some of those that are a little more difficult. I'm sure there's more out there, and I think I will pulse my team to see if maybe they've got some examples to hold out. But secondly, and it's too bad that I don't think it'd be my contention that any...
Matt, can we interrupt you for a second? Because it's very hard to hear you. Can we ask everyone to please put their line on mute if you're not speaking so we can hear Matt? Thank you.
And Gisela, can you jump in on the call and see which line is causing the trouble and mute it, please?
Oh, that's much better.
Oh, excuse me, Mikey. Sorry.
Thanks, guys. So I was just saying twofold. I find myself agreeing with Michele on the TLDs that he highlighted, and I would imagine that there are others out there that fall into the generally good ease of use and understanding. But then, secondly, you know, I do think that whatever process we come up with here, it's my contention and belief that it needs to actually be a registry level process. So the ones that Michele highlighted, both in the case of Navinet and the case of URID, are run and managed by the registry. So it would be my preference that when we talk about this stuff, that we factor that into the conversation as well. Thanks, James.
Okay, I'm being told that it's my line that has the interference, which is strange because I'm in a silent room with the door closed.
You sound fine.
I have been muting
French.
And I have been muting when others are speaking, so I'm not really sure if that's. Thank you, Matt. That's good info, and I think we need to discuss that registry level process or this registrar process. Because registrars have their own existing processes as well that currently don't involve the registry. Or perhaps you know, because it's ICANN, you know, we might see something along the lines of our existing transfer process where both the registry and registrar, both registrars and the registry are involved in the, you know, in the transaction. But, you know, we want to balance that with this desire to keep it simple and keep it scalable and all the other concerns that I think that we've addressed. But I appreciate your offer to pull your team. I think if, for those of you who aren't familiar, Matt's registrar works with more country codes than I can imagine because of their particular business model and the clientele that they serve. They have a country code experience coverage that is probably unmatched in the industry. So I think we would all really benefit from any advice or guidance that your team would provide on that.
Yeah, I will take the action item to circle back around and have something out to the list either later this week or early next.
All right, thank you. Chris, is that a new hand? If so, go ahead.
No, sorry, I left up from before. I'll take it down.
Ah, okay, thank you. And McKelly, is that a new hand? It never is an old hand with McKelly. Go ahead.
That's a new one. A couple of things. I think it's great, Matt's. Looking to do so, he's looking to poll his team, and that's absolutely fantastic. I'd also ask Simonetta to do something on her end as well, because I know they deal with quite a few CCs. It's just the question, I suppose, is just simply if Simonetta could ask her colleagues, you know, which of the CCs, you know, how can I word this diplomatically? Which of the CCs make transfers and updates of two domain names easy, workable, and secure? Because I think this is another thing as well that must be emphasized at all times. Ease of use, yes. We obviously want that. Automation, we want that, yes. But you don't want to end up in a situation where we're pushing... we're pushing something along and actually making it more insecure. You know, you need to get that balance right. The other thing was, yeah, the solutions I've mentioned have all been, because most ccTLDs manage like a tripartite contract where there is a contractual relationship of at some level between the registrar and the registry, between the registrar and the registrant, and between the registrant and the registry. God, that's a mouthful. But there's a multiple contracts there. Whereas in the case of a lot of GTLDs, the contract, now some lawyer can jump in and beat me over the head. Do we have any lawyers on the call? Or is this a lawyer-free zone? I think it's actually a lawyer-free zone. Oh, my God. Oh, no, Phil Corwin's there. You know, but the contracts are much flatter. There's a contractual relationship primarily between the registrar and the registrant, and between the registry and the registrar. There isn't as much of an over. I don't know what the word I'm looking for here is. An overlap, a cross filtration, whatever, between the registrant and the registry, except in the case of sponsored TLDs. So that's an area which of extra complication or lack of complication, depending which way you look at it. The other thing as well, of course, is that the biggest registries are both thin. So there's no point asking VeriSign at the moment to deal with a change of control because they don't have any of the data. So that's an elephant, that's the huge, big, humongous elephant in the room, James, who works for GoDaddy, and I shouldn't talk to about elephants. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, McKelly, and I appreciate how your humor is always cutting in my direction. No, you're correct that change of control events right now are invisible to the largest registries, and I think that probably our secondary market representatives will tell you that that's also where a lot of the change of control activity is occurring. So that's going to be one of the challenges to this. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, James. No, I was I don't know that it's ever happened before, but I find myself in the second time in an hour wholeheartedly agreeing with McKinley. So I just wanted to I just wanted to say that that's actually a very good point, and I think, well, for those of you that don't know on the call, the issue of thick who is has been, in ComEd, has been batted around, and I understand it's now been delayed. Is that right, Marika? The GNSO kicked the thick who is issues report down the road, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, this is Marika. They're expected to take a decision on that in Costa Rica at their next meeting.
Cool. But McKinley brings up a very good point that should at least be one of the considerations we have as we go through this process.
Thanks, Matt. And I see that Mikey is lending his own sense of humor with all of the symbol functions in mind map. So hopefully we can capture that in the final report. Well, we have just a minute left in our call, so maybe this is a good point to put to pause and talk about our discussions here on our next call. I'll give Simonetta the last word here, but I just wanted to mention that we can't close this topic until we meet with the CCNSO, but we should at least look for some sort of a checkpoint where we can stop and then circle back to it after Costa Rica, because we certainly don't want to burn all of our meetings between then and there talking about these issues, and I think we could. I mean, there's just so much variety out there. But go ahead, Simonetta, and then we will close the call for today.
Well, it was my point was a question more than a statement, and that was on this topic of thick versus thin. Is it from what you know about where the process is right now? Is there any reason to assume that this is going to change, or does the fact that it currently exists mean that whatever solution we come up with either really can only be something that only the registrars can do, because that would be the only way to design one policy that will work regardless of what the TLD is? Or is it reasonable to assume that maybe this is going to change and an ideal process can be designed that takes into account that each of the registries, including the big ones that are currently thin, will be able to play a role in this?
That's a great observation. My off-the-cuff response, Simonetta, would be that the fact that we have two very large, very active thin registries means that we can't have an exclusively registry-led process here, that the registrars will have to play some involvement. If it may not be total, but I think that they have to stay involved through this process, and that we can't completely just, you know, punt this over the wall and say, this is a registry function, which some of the country codes, I think, would say that that's the best way to handle it. Any other thoughts or comments or questions here? I think we will take up this discussion next
mention,
week.
You're wonderful at chairing, James, and you're a very good sport.
Well, you know, you gotta find your fun somewhere, and for some of us, this is a hobby and a pastime. But let's pick up the conversation here next week, as well as some of the follow-up items that we've identified, and certainly appreciate Matt's offer to pull his team. I think that he's probably got some expertise that we can tap into for our discussion. So thanks, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, James.
Thanks.